And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, yes, we've heard your cries from the Twitter machine. Yes, Gopher Illustrated members, I've seen your posts on the message board. This is your post-spring ball download. Now, Luke had some issues last night when we were recording, and we lost the first 2 minutes of audio, so this is kind of the filler for that. And that's where, disclaimer, every other part of the audio should sound much better than this one. But again, it's been a time here this spring trying to cover the football team when we were only able to see probably 45 minutes of the team before the spring game. But that's the beauty of being able to have as many assistant coach interviews as we've had on GI. So with that in mind, we'll send you into the audio here, and we appreciate your patience. Thank you.
Yeah, we definitely got to get an episode out there. You know, it's kind of hard given the current status of your job and being able to get intel and, you know, cultivate ideas and thoughts and stuff. When Ryan, I don't know if you know this, but
how much time do you have for me to vent?
I don't actually for football. I don't want to hear you vent anymore. I've got enough of it through text messages. And here's the thing. Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't think they care either.
No one cares to throw me a pity party at what Luke is saying.
And, no.
Fairness here. I have been getting one-on-one interviews here the last week or so here with essentially every assistant coach not named Rob Wenger for obvious reasons. Is I think the conversation between the two of us would be very enlightening to some, maybe, but I don't think it would be very productive.
I think that most people would pay for that pay-per-view, right? Like,
maybe, but that's where...
Do you got him by like a good 2 inches?
I don't know. I don't remember how tall Wenger is. All I know is I'm 6'4". So whatever Wenger is, but that's where the good people get frustrated. I don't know. How is that a brag that I'm 6'4"? I mean, I'm just stating the facts that I'm 6'4", and I don't remember what Rob Wenger is. Like, is he like 6? I think he's like around 6 foot.
Okay.
I think.
You somehow tell me that I'm short, but whatever.
You are short. You're short compared to me. But that's where I've gotten interviews up on Gopher Illustrated so far with Matt Simon, the receivers coach, O-line coach Brian Callahan, Chad Wilt went up this morning. And part two's come tomorrow. We already got Joe Rossi, the D coordinator. I'm going to get Mike Sanford tomorrow. So,
are these behind the paywall?
I know at least half of them are. I don't remember.
Okay.
I think like part one today with Chad Wilt was free, but like tomorrow we'll be behind the paywall because we're talking like all the young guys that.
Okay.
Everybody wants to know about.
Okay, but okay, let's be honest here. Like, this is a shameless plug for Gopher Illustrated here. Like,
who is how many pennies it is?
It's just about 100. But who so far to you has been the best interview? I know you haven't concluded all of them. I know you've got a couple more scheduled. Yeah. But thus far,
I hate this question.
Why do you hate it? Why do you hate it? You got to pick a favorite.
For the most part,
okay.
They're all really good, and that's where. You know, I don't know if it's just year five of PJ, and you know, I've gotten to know some of these guys pretty well, and they're pretty candid about things. But maybe the one, because it's recency bias, my mind here is Chad Wilt. That was kind of my first extended time talking with him. I mean, mm-hmm. We talked on and off the record for over an hour last night. I mean, into the wee hours in the morning. It's just kind of the way it worked out. And you know, he's obviously, and we'll get into it here on this episode, but he's. He's very optimistic about his D-line. He's very realistic mm-hmm. about his D-line. But, you know, Callie's always good, and Rossi is always candid. And, you know, we'll see how Sanford goes tomorrow. But the other reason we needed to put this episode out, Luke, is you know what season it is now? Lawn mowing season, baby. Oh, yeah. I've already mowed my lawn twice, and it's itching for a third one right here. So
I think it's not just lawn mowing season, but it's also – you know, like sprinkler starting season. It's also get your grass seed down season. Maybe it's dethatching season. Maybe it's aerating season, right? Let's not discriminate. Pay attention to your lawn once again.
I was potting some flowers here this week yet, and then I got to hit the greenhouse to get my vegetable garden going here this weekend. So For those of you who like to kill time with us on the lawnmower, for those of you who like to have us kill time for you at the gym, for those of you who'd like us to kill time on your alleged commute to work or whatever other reason, it's we're back and we're going to try to provide you some sustenance tonight, even though Luke doesn't really agree with kind of the outline for tonight.
I definitely don't.
He hates listening to this. But I think since we didn't really do one before the spring, we did one and Mr. Buer decided to not release it. We're going to make sure that Luke gets back on track here. He changes his best, and we're going to get some position by position thoughts going, considering, like I said, I think it's been 3 months since I released the one with me and Alan True talking about National Signing Day. I know I got some requests to talk a little recruiting. And here's all I'll say about recruiting, Luke. June's going to be bananas. It is going to be nutty.
Would you say that it's time to get on the Gopher Illustrated train now, because June's going to be crazy? Like, you got to kind of build some credibility on the message board right now. Yeah. So when you bring steaming hot takes about recruits in June,
sure,
you have some validity to throw out there.
Oh, yeah, go for it. I mean, that's where I'm looking at the official visit list that I got pinned on Gopher Illustrated. I got 18 names on there, and I'm going to keep them there and not put them underneath the football recruiting tab for 24/7 people to see. So for you freeloaders who just want to go to the football recruiting tab and then click on visits to see who's coming, I ain't going to do that. That ain't that. Like, Gopher Illustrated members have known these 18 names here for a while. But why June's going to be really interesting is satellite camps, and official visit seasons. And that's where starting on June 1, I mean, we're talking satellite camp season, baby, where it's Lindenwood, Missouri for a couple days, then they come back for a PJ Fleck camp. Then they hit the road again to, like, Illinois, Texas, Florida State, SMU, Mercer in Georgia. Then they come back for an official visit weekend, and then they're back out at satellite camps, another official visit weekend, then more PJ Fleck. I mean, and if you know anything about PJ Fleck recruiting, as he has shown the previous four recruiting cycles that he's been here, essentially, Fleck likes to get this stuff done by the time July hits, essentially. And that's where you look at how many commits they have. I think they only have four or five right now. I expect that to double, if not triple, in the month of June. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's just not gloss over why this is kind of important. They're going to get live evals of players, something they haven't been able to do in how many 15 months?
15 months by the time June comes. And I cannot stress to you enough how much I have discussed that with people very close to thinking at the Gopher Football Complex, and how I kind of asked the question to each one of these assistant coaches for the interviews was, I mean, have you told your wife or significant other that you're not going to see them for 3 weeks? Starting June 1, and they all know. I mean, they're all football significant others, and they know how this works. And but it's like those guys are excited, but they're also like, we're going to be dead exhausted by the time June 25th hits, because we're going to have three, four official visit weekends or weekdays. We're going to be on the road constantly for satellite camps or our own camps, and that's where live evaluations are a part of it. So that's where this 2022 class has been waiting to get live evaluated for a long time, those 15, 16 months now. And so it's going to be popping on Gopher Illustrated. So if you want to, bite the bullet per se again, it's 100 pennies or 10 dimes or 20 nickels, Luke.
There are a lot of people on the message board that have been in like, it's boring around here. It isn't going to be boring soon. Just wait.
I mean, it's really significantly jumped in terms of recruiting action here in the last, I'd say, week. And it's going to continue to get even more, steam's going to continue to pick up more and more, and that's where you're going to see these commitments start to pop come June. So this is us doing the plug for Gopher Illustrated. And to be fair, I mean, Luke, to be honest with you, the site has never been bigger, which is mind boggling to me.
Yeah.
I mean, Minnesota's coming off a 3-4 season, and spring ball access was
zilch.
It was what it was. And I didn't have a ton that I would normally on a normal year be able to provide them. And still, we are as big as we've ever been subscription-wise, when we're as big as we've ever been in terms of, say, page views or sessions. So interest is certainly there for Gopher football, with Ohio State just 4 months away now. And you know, spoiler alert, by the end of this position by position thing, this is where I'm going to tell you, I think Minnesota is going to have a pretty dang good football team this year. Now, I don't know if it's going to break right like it did in 2019 for them. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, I think this is going to be a much improved team and a team that should be competing for a Big Ten West title.
Okay, so let's do a quick recap then of the spring game. Obviously, we'll intermix this as we go position by position. But just real quick on the recap side, how surprised were you that the Maroon team won this game?
I was surprised because they didn't have the great offensive line.
Right.
That would be going to the gold team that essentially had the starters. But, you know, Tanner and those guys were able to move the ball pretty well. And yeah, I was surprised. I was going to say, you know, I bet you I would have set the line before the game like Maroon, I'd say -2.5.
Really?
Considering I didn't really trust the kicking game. And for those of you that were there, there's a reason we still don't trust the kicking game. But hopefully Matthew Trickett is our savior, the MAC Special Teams Player of the Year from 2019 that's going to be joining the team here in June to hopefully save us from the kicking woes that plague this team. But, I mean, gold should have been – how did I say it?
You said plus – or you said -2 for Maroon. I would have given gold
team. Minus, yeah. Yes, yeah, gold -2.5 is kind of – maybe what I would have had it, maybe 4.5, you know, maybe be a little bit more bullish there. But that's where, you know, I think that kind of leads us into it, where you look at the two contrasting styles of the quarterbacks in Zach Anakstead and Tanner Morgan. And I don't think you can really get a much different than Zach Anakstead and his mindset of we're just going to push the ball down the field. We're just going to push the ball into tight windows and we're going to, you know, try to really make things happen and make explosive plays happen. Then on the flip side, you have Tanner Morgan, who is
game manager.
I mean, he's better, or he has shown that he can be better than the game manager title.
Yeah.
But he certainly wants to take care of the ball more, which if we've learned anything about PJ Fleck and the way he likes his offenses run, now going into year five, he likes to, you know, he has the sand, the ball is the program. And that's where we've talked at length, especially in 2020, about how his trestle ball mentality is a part of the reason why Minnesota went 3-4 last year and mm-hmm. not 5-2. You think about that Maryland fourth quarter. You blow a 3-score fourth quarter lead because you play trestle ball and your defense is horrible. And then you lose against Wisconsin in a very winnable game as well. And that's where you're hoping that PJ lets Sanford and Morgan kind of open up the offense a little bit more. But I mean, what did you watch the spring game? You were there.
Yeah, no, let's be honest. I didn't watch almost anything while I was there because I had a 2-year-old who was really fascinated with the stairs. Like if you're a 2-year-old, have you ever seen that many stairs consecutively in a row? I mean, he was into it. And, So I did watch it on TV though. So I do have some hot takes to throw in here from time to time.
Let's do it.
I think there's no surprise for those that have listened for the last, I don't know how many years we've done this. I am less risk averse than a PJ Fleck would be, much less than a Jerry Kill would be. And I do have a slight bias towards Zach Anakstead. I would have loved to see him not get hurt in 2019 and see how that would have all played out. But, you know, it is what it is. It was a great season. I'm not going to deny that. But I like his approach and taking a few more risks. You just have to be calculated in those risks, right? And, you know, the last interception, whatever, that doesn't mean anything, right? You're taking the last opportunity. I kind of liked what I saw at Anakstead. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first time we've really seen him now in 2.5 seasons.
I mean, and he capped the ball, Ryan.
We'll get into that whole kerfuffle that sent a lot of people down a rabbit hole on GI. But, yeah, when you think about Zach Anakstead and the last time you were able to see him, it was 2018 getting knocked out of the game at Nebraska.
Right.
He has to go to the hospital, the emergency room, and then we don't see him really again. 2019, first week of fall camp. Breaks his foot. He's out the entire year. 2020, we really don't see him at all in game action. So it had been 2.5 years since anybody had really been able to say, because remember 2020, you know, we didn't get a spring game because COVID knocked it out. So no one had seen Zach Hanekstad in like 24, 28, 30 months. And, you know, at one of the things that, you know, has been talked about around the Gopher football complex is, and something that Mike Sanford has talked about, is Zach is a lot more lean than he was. You know, Zach is another guy that battled COVID here during the pandemic, and, you know, wasn't at his best, in his best shape because of that at times. But, you know, that's where this spring, you know, he's really taken it up a notch, and you were able to see him take one around the corner there, which I think people like to are pointing to. Well, look, Zach Hanekstad will keep it. Why can't Tanner Morgan? Tanner Morgan didn't keep one. Here's the thing you should take from that is maybe this is where Sanford is trying to say, we're going to let the quarterbacks keep. Now, I don't remember Tanner really doing much RPO stuff.
Not a lot.
In his series out there compared to Zach. Now, you also have to remember Zach Anikstead's offensive coordinator for the spring game was Matt Simon, while Mike Sanford had Tanner Morgan. Now, I'm just saying that they're going to call two little bit different games now.
Yeah.
This is where I tell you that Sanford, I asked Sanford, I literally asked Mike Sanford, because everybody has the question, I have the question. Like, Tanner is as athletic as he's been on campus here. Tanner Morgan, to be honest with you, knowing some of the strength and conditioning results behind the scenes, like, he has one of the fastest 10-yard times on the team.
Yeah.
Of the 100-something people out there. So Tanner can get from 0 to 10 yards as quick as anybody on the team. So, Mike Sanford, are we going to be able to see that this fall? And that's where he kind of answered that, you know, we're getting into that more certainly now that I know what each one of these guys can do and yada, yada, yada. So I think that's what you should take away from that Zach Hanekstad run is, number one, Zach is more athletic than you remember. But that also, I think Mike Sanford's going to let the quarterback run a little bit more, considering that he knows Zach Hanekstad is healthy now. You know, we didn't see Jacob Clark or really Cole Kramer in the spring game, and I know a lot of people were speculating recklessly as to why. Jacob Clark was in the COVID protocols because COVID hit the team about 2 weeks before the spring game. And then Cole Kramer, while he did take a series, he literally just got back like 2 days before the spring game because he was out because of COVID protocols. So he wasn't exactly in game shape and hadn't been getting any reps. So they're not going to throw him to the Wolves and have fans see a product that they're probably not going to like to see. So that's where essentially you got to see it was the Zach Hanekstad versus Tanner Morgan show. And, you know, I enjoyed it, but that's where I still don't think this is a quarterback competition. And
no.
I know there's some people that are very angry about that from, you know, some of the, again, Twitter is an interesting place at times. And that's where, again, I come back to this, Luke, and that's kind of what we open with at the quarterback position is think about the way PJ Fleck runs his offense. It's incredibly risk averse.
Right.
It's incredibly, we're not going to ask a ton of the quarterback. And that's where Zach Hanekstad probably has a higher ceiling, but he definitely has a lower floor. And the lower floor is the thing that probably keeps PJ Fleck up at night because he'll make throws like he did on Derek LeCaptain's interception where scrambles to his right, makes a poor decision to throw across his body, and it goes right into the yep. linebacker's hands where maybe Tanner Morgan just tucks that and run. I mean, live to see another day. But, I mean, you certainly saw the connection between Tanner Morgan and Chris Ottman Bell still there.
Yep.
You know, Tanner did miss some throws, certainly. But I think the important thing I took away from that spring game, and again, there's only so many things you can take away from it, but his deep ball accuracy looked a lot better in the spring game of 21 than it did at any point of 2020.
Yeah, let's a couple of things I want to hit on quarterback before we move on. First, on the running, it's a spring game. Don't read that much into it. He's not going to get hit anyway, so there's no risk there. Not saying that he wouldn't run, sure. But let's not read into that very much.
Yeah,
second, that ball to Brady Boyd on the money, like
yeah,
great ball. Yeah. And then the other thing is on the take on, you know, is this a PJ Fleck call or a Mike Sanford call? On quarterback, I'm with you. Morgan has earned the right to start. I don't think you take that away from them. I don't think it's a QB competition, but Kirk Shiraka or Mike Sanford, who's going to take more risk. And now I recognize that Kirk Shiraka ran inside zone to death in the beginning of 2019. So you might think that. I think Kirk Shiraka takes more risk than Mike Sanford. Tell me I'm wrong.
I think it's tough to say because I don't think we really got an accurate picture of what a Mike Sanford offense would look like.
Okay.
And it's something that all these assistant coaches have talked about, especially the new ones. Like when I talked to Chad Wilt, he was like, yo, I got here in March. I got three practices to like get to know my guys. And then you know what happened? COVID. And then I didn't see them again until October, where I had 3 weeks to get them ready into game shape. And I had to throw them out in the fire.
I mean, I get that. And
so then you try to extrapolate that to Mike Sanford, Luke. And it's like, yeah, I mean, we saw some of his tendencies. I mean, I can tell you for a fact, if you love inside fades, Mike Sanford is going to be the man for you.
Yeah.
But I think we'll get a lot more accurate depiction of what this offense is going to look like this fall. Now, it may still be risk averse.
Yeah.
Less so than what Kirk Shiraka's offenses were. But I think now that Sanford knows what he has an entire offseason, and it's something that he talked about, is he knows what makes Tanner tick, and Tanner knows what makes Mike tick. And they know what each other's strengths and weaknesses are. And Mike talked about, I know what Tanner does well now, and I have to tailor the offense to that. Does that spell to you that there's a quarterback competition imminent?
No, I don't think there should be. I'm just saying, I'm trying to read the room a little bit. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it's PJ's decision. He lives and dies with all the outcomes, right? And rightfully so. He's the guy earning the big paycheck. So, all right, let's jump away from this. Talk a little wide receiver here. Chris Ottman Bell, good. He's very good.
Yeah.
No surprise there. He looked the part.
Yeah. I mean, what'd he go? 3-4 for 100 in a touchdown. I mean, Ottman Bell.
Great catch on that fade for a touchdown. Unbelievable catch.
Chris Ottman Bell does what Chris Ottman Bell does.
Yeah.
And that's where maybe he doesn't create separation like Tyler Johnson does and Rashad Bateman did. But I can assure you, if you can find me a better 50-50 ball winner than Chris Ottman Bell, I mean, that's all he does is he just wins contested catches, and that's what Minnesota's going to ask him to do. And I don't think – here's what I'll say, because I know you want to keep moving in from positions and to different guys, but I don't think from reading the tea leaves around the staff here, I don't think it should be assumed that Chris Ottman Bell is going to walk into the workload of targets that Tyler Johnson or Rashad Bateman did. Like, I still think he'll probably be around that 10 target per game. I don't think you're going to see games like you do with Tyler or Rashad where they got 14, 15, 16 targets. I just don't think that's the way this offense is going to operate, but we'll kind of see how it goes.
Okay, let's get a couple other names here in at wide receiver. Daniel Jackson. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah. To me, you know, from talking with Matt Simon too, it sounds like Jackson had the spring that they were hoping was going to have. From talking to Simon, and again, you can read his thoughts on GI if you want to know more. But, you know, he's reworked his body to a degree where, you know, Simon's like, I don't want to say, you know, he lost baby fat and put on weight. He's like, there wasn't really any baby fat there, but he lost bad weight. He put on good weight, and he's at the same weight. Like, he's more explosive than he was. He feels more comfortable than he was. And that's where I think you can say now, and it's something I wasn't ready to say, you know, 8 weeks ago, but you know, from talking to people around there, it sounds like Daniel Jackson is going to be your wide receiver too. And I feel pretty good in that. But that's where it then becomes, Luke, what in the world? I mean, wide receiver and three on?
I think
there's a multitude of different ways.
So let me throw you some names, at least from the very limited that I saw. And tell me who you think has the opportunity to rise to the top. So Mike Brown Stevens kind of had an up down game, had the fumble, had a drop or two, but also made some plays, right? Dylan Wright looks the part physically.
So I can correct you now before it gets meaningful.
Yeah.
It's spelled Dylan. So you think Dylan Wright, it's Dalen. Something I was corrected of. So it's Dalen Wright,
who's
the Texas A&M transfer.
This is just like hard. Even when I'm right, I'm wrong.
I know. But that's where Dalen Wright's skill set is different than anything else they have in the room right now.
Yeah, for sure.
He's the tallest. He's the longest. He certainly has the top end speed to be a guy that can take the top off defense, and his catch radius is something like they haven't had in terms of the length that he has there. Now,
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that Matt Simon kind of compared the situation with Dalen Wright to we're essentially opening the fire hydrant and spraying it at him and saying, we understand that this may be not fair to you, and we're trying to tone down the fire hydrant that's spraying at you and spraying into your mouth, and you're trying to ingest everything that you can, but we need to have you go through a spring ball, and we have to throw everything at you so we know, what you took, what you didn't take, so we know where we can continue to work with you on going into the summer. But I think if I was a betting man, and of which I think I am, I think Dalen Wright is probably your wide receiver three to start, just because, again, he can be that X receiver. He is not the guy you want to, run some crazy route with a bunch of breaks in it. You want Dalen Wright to run a skinny post. You want Dalen Wright to run straight. You want Dalen Wright to run a post. I mean, one cut and go, that's Dalen Wright, and he can use that length and athleticism to get on top of you. But that's where you look at these other guys, like you said, Michael Brown Stevens didn't have a great spring game at all, but he's certainly still in the mix. You didn't get to see Dalen Wright, by the way, because nursing a little bit of an injury. You still didn't get to see the guy I was banging the drum for all last summer because it was behind the scenes, and that was Doug Emelin, someone I still think it gets reps this fall. And then I think you see a guy like Clay Geary.
I mean, you can't keep...
Everybody wants to bury Clay Geary, I think, including me at times. Yeah,
he produces.
It's a sixth year, 5'11 kid that was a former walk-on, and it's like you have a lot more athletically gifted guys out there. But as you saw in the spring game, he's getting open and he's making catches. Now, I want him to be the primary option against Wisconsin on a post across the middle of the field? Hell no. But do I think he can have a role in this offense? Certainly. And that's where we've already talked about, like, three guys, and then I think you can throw in the true freshman there, Brady Boyd and Lemecki Brockington, where, it was Lemecki really behind the scenes up until the spring game there who was the one making all the plays. And now Brady was making plays, but Lemecki was making, he was making a case to potentially put himself on a meaningful position on the depth chart going into the summer. And I still think he is, but I think the point to take across, especially from you saw, as you noted, Luke, Brady Boyd makes a nice catch along the sidelines. Brady Boyd also takes a hitch near the line of scrimmage, makes a guy miss, gets a first down. Minnesota fully believes they hit on both Brady Boyd and Lemecki Brockington. So you have a lot of inexperience at receiver, as we've noted, because essentially it's Chrisant and Bell and then everybody else. But there is some talented bodies there that I feel better about receiver today than I did 8 weeks ago.
All right, just for clarity's sake, is it Dylan Hilliard McGill or is it Dalen? Because they're spelled exactly the same.
I know. Trust me.
When I'm right, I'm wrong. And when I'm right, I'm right.
Yes, I could go through an all name list for some of the recruits I've talked to over the years, but it is. Yeah.
I'm just trying to protect my brand here.
I still think guys like Jonathan Mann, Peter Utebach, they still need quite a bit of time before I start to think about them seriously contributing to this football team.
All right. Tight end. Let's go tight end. Obviously no Bryce Withum, no Brevin Spanford. We saw some Co-Keefe action. That was nice. He did have a couple false starts as well, but, he made some plays. Is he a fifth year senior now?
So Bryce Withum is a seventh year.
No, I said Co-Keefe.
Yeah, I understand that.
Come on.
Bryce Withum is a seventh year senior and Co-Keefe is a sixth year senior.
Got it.
So we're talking about two guys that have to be pretty dang close to be able to rent a car and not have to pay extra fees. So, you have both those guys. You know what you have. I don't understand why Co-Keefe was playing. Because Co-Keefe has had...
Nobody's going to keep Co-Keefe off the field if he wants to be on the field.
I understand that, but you also have to think big picture here. Everybody knows what Co-Keefe does well.
I don't think you listen to me, Ryan.
I think I do. And I think I know his injury history. And I know that things that could be on a in a precarious position if a couple things happen to Cokie. So why in the world is he out there, you know, taking body blows in the spring? Like, I don't understand that one bit. But that's where, you know, Bryce and Co., you know what you have. Brevin is still recovering from off-season surgery. I'm never going to get off the hype train, I'm telling you now. I think this is totally the year. This is totally the year. It's Brevin Spanfort time, where he gets like 20 balls and five touchdowns, and you know, that finally works. You also saw Nnamdi Adeyemejumere move to tight end this spring. He was the former, I think, 3 or 4 star kid out of Texas. It didn't work at wide receiver, and that's where places like Alabama and Texas A&M were looking at him as potentially a tight end. Well, he's a tight end now. We'll see how that transition goes. And you saw Austin Henderson, the true freshman there. However, yeah, we want to deem freshman in this NCAA eligibility.
He looked good, though.
Yeah, he's your pass. He's a pass-catching tight end type of guy that is willing to stick his nose in there. So, you know, for this fall, I think you're going to see a steady dose of Witham, a steady dose of Keith, a steady dose of Brevin Spanford if he can stay healthy. And then the other guy we haven't talked about is Nick Callerup, the Wayzata walk-on tight end that I think has certainly earned a role behind the scenes here this spring. As a guy, once Witham and Keith leave, I mean, he's going to be kind of your prototypical Y-blocking tight end to complement guys like Brevin Spanford and Austin Henderson.
All right, let's go to offensive line before we finish up with running back. As we noted earlier, the Gold team basically had the starting offensive line. Or who you would assume would be the starting offensive line, right? I think the things that are notable.
Going to punt you to the moon.
What?
Because what did I hit you up in G chat about today?
I don't have the slightest idea.
Do you remember this? I said, let's go back here and say.
Oh yeah, you want
to? When I text you,
you want to roast people? Yeah.
Remind me tonight to scold people for these O-line takes, because you just did the same thing everybody else has been doing. Well, the Gold team had the starting offensive line.
No. I said they didn't, what you would Luke. Assume would be the starting offensive line.
Based, you know what? You get into it, and then I'll step up on my little platform.
Okay. Here. What you would assume is based on starts in previous games. So obviously Curtis Dunlop is coming off of injury. Daniel Faalele is coming off of opting out / injury. So maybe while, you know, on paper you pencil them in as starters, there's no guarantee there. Obviously Schluter and Blaze Andres are starters for sure, right? So they were going to start regardless. So and they played well. And by the way, Sam Schluter, touchdown, me boy. That was wonderful.
You got 2 fat guy touchdowns with Daniel Faalele throwing Cokie. Look at Cokie with those dancer feet in the back of the end zone with those toe taps.
Yeah.
And then God bless Victor Pless at 5'10", 185, watching Sam Schluter at 6'6", 310 come around the end. Who do you think is going to win that one at the goal line?
Right. Oof. But, you know, on the other side, I think you'd obviously pencil in John Michael Schmidt on the maroon team as a starter, and then Connor Olson as a starter. I think the rest is kind of up for grabs, right? I think those 4, Connor Olson, John Michael Schmidt, Sam Schluter and Blaze Andres are almost all guarantees. I think the rest are question marks on starters for the offensive line. So it was maybe more even than I thought, but people can easily assume.
You can't hear this, but it's me rubbing my temples. To where I don't know who put the impression in somebody's mind that is now groupthink, that I don't know what Connor Olson did to someone, but everyone who is vocal about the offensive line right now on Gopher Illustrated is assuming that Curtis Dunlap is going to start over Connor Olson. I'm not saying you are. I'm telling you people are saying that. And I keep thinking to myself, what did Connor Olson do to hurt you? I mean, you're not here because here's the reality. Connor Olson has started the last 45 games for Minnesota. Right. Curtis Dunlap is like 6 months off an Achilles tear. And we are assuming Dunlap's going to start over him because
Well, obviously because he went to IMG Academy and he was a 4-star recruit. Like, one time committed to Florida.
Here's your starting offensive line for Ohio State. It's going to be Schluter, Olsen, John Michael, Blaze, and Falele. Like, that's just the reality with Curtis Dunlap coming in as your sixth offensive lineman. You could say that Axel or Carter Shaw, the Utah State transfer, are your seventh and eighth guys. And then you also have Ariante Irsari.
Yeah.
J.J. Gaudet is 9 and 10. I mean, they're as deep on the offensive line as I've seen them. They're as talented on the offensive line in my 10 years covering this team as an offensive line that I've seen. They have, you look at that starting five that I named, I think it's 140 career starts between the five of them. You're old, whereas, again, you look, go from left to right across that offensive line, Schluter sixth year, Olsen sixth year. You have John Michael Schmitz in his fifth year, Blaze Andrews in his fifth year, and Daniel Falele in his fourth year. Okay, you're really old, you're really experienced, and you're pretty talented, and you're pretty deep. But I cannot stress enough, like, the expectations for Curtis Dunlap right now need to be tempered. Because while he went through the spring game and he went through spring practice, we're talking about a guy that was 6 months off of an Achilles tear. And yeah, in another 3-4 months, he'll be 8, 9, 10 months off the Achilles tear. But he is not close to what he was mobility-wise in 2019 when you last saw him go against first-round picks against Auburn. Like, he needs time to really kind of figure it out and get healthy. And that's where, who are you pulling to play Curtis Dunlap? Because I can assure you, you ain't pulling Connor Olsen. You ain't pulling Blaze Andrews. And you ain't pulling John Michael. And Curtis can only play guard. So, what am I missing here? Can someone enlighten me, and can that someone be Luke Buehr?
No, I can't enlighten you. Like I said, I think that people are basing an assumption on paper and kind of forgetting last year in general, right? And then, you know, and the paper is the hype in terms of the recruiting rankings, which your industry like Curtis, is responsible
for. Brian Callahan will even tell you, like, he thinks the world that Curtis Dunlap is an incredibly talented kid, but we're still talking about a guy that is going to be not even a year off an Achilles tear. And he's got two guys at guard in Andrews and Connor Olsen that have played a ton of football, and they've been pretty decent to pretty good at it. So I just want to get at that off my chest, that this is something that needs to stop. Curtis Dunlap, while he is going to be the sixth offensive lineman, and that you're going to see that package come back, it's not going anywhere. But, like, let's just temper some expectations for some of these guys. But the overall point is, if this offensive line isn't one of the best that we've seen, especially run blocking wise, and that's where I even talk. I mean, because what had been the big thing about the O-line, Luke, that we've talked about for years now? Like, this O-line against middling Big Ten teams like Nebraska and Purdue and Illinois, they can look like world beaters. But then the Iowa comes to town, the Wisconsin comes to town, you know, the Northwestern comes to town. And it's like, what happened? Like, what happened to the offensive line from the week before? And that's why I asked Callahan about it. I go, you know, when you face these physical teams like Wisconsin and Iowa, what has to happen for them to take the next step? And, you know, he was kind of testy about it to start, but then by the end of his answer, he was like, you're right. Like, we need to be better. He knows the record against Iowa and Wisconsin, like we all do, 1-7 in the Fleck era. And that's where he's like, it starts with us. And that's one of our challenges this year, is to change our best every day. And it'll be better than we were yesterday and all the different coaching cliches, but that's what you want to see from this group, is that they take it to the next level and they can maybe, you know, bring the physicality to the Wisconsins like they did in 18 or to the Iowas like we've seen at times. So we'll see what we can from this offensive line going forward, Luke.
All right. So let's get to running back. Cam Wiley, Preston Jelen, your maroon team running backs. Mo Ibrahim didn't play.
No,
Trey Potts, again. Kai Thomas didn't play. Bryce Williams, though. We saw some Bryce Williams and some Trey Potts.
Yep.
I mean, Potts looks good. Cam Wiley had moments.
I'm all aboard the pods hype train.
Yeah, I'm on
wherever
it
wants to take me. I'm going to ride it to the very last station because I think he's a feature back.
Yeah, I'm on it, but I want to see them. I want to see them get him involved in the pass game.
I mean, can't both statements be true?
No, I
think he could be a feature back, and I also think he could be involved more in the pass game.
I want more.
I mean, that's fine, but okay. Start off running back. Mo Ibrahim didn't play in the spring game because he's observing Rabadon. Totally good with it. Again, he doesn't need – what do we need to see? Like, the same thing with Co-Keefe that goes for Mo Ibrahim. Like, even if he wasn't observing Rabadon, I don't want to see Mo Ibrahim get a single carry. He's got like 550 career collegiate carries for like 5.5 yards a carry. I know what Mo Ibrahim can do.
If anything – if anything, we want to see him get fewer carries in the game so he can be fresh.
That's the funniest part is Mike Sanford. I asked him about that. He goes, we're a bell cow offense. Like, I want a bell cow back. For those of you who don't know what that term means in this context, so Mo is essentially going to get a plethora of the carries. But, you know, Sanford also acknowledged, like, we know that Trey Potts can help us. Cam Wiley can help us. Bryce Williams can help us. Preston Jelen can help us. And we'll see what Kai Thomas can do when he gets healthy. And that's where Kai Thomas, still recovering from a shoulder off-season surgery that he sustained from an injury in fall camp. You know, he was running around out there during fall practices. He just can't take contact yet. So that's why you didn't see him in the spring game. But he's a guy that is still obviously highly thought of. And that's where Trey Potts, I'm telling you, when Mo comes and goes after the season, I'd be willing to bet you like a dinner at Keani, considering it's like the halfway point between us, that Trey Potts is the one that's going to emerge from that backfield. Because I think really the only thing he has to prove is that he can stay healthy. Now, that has obviously been the biggest thing in his career that's held him back from high school to college. But I just think that kid has a world of talent. You know, we'll see how Wiley continues to develop.
He feels a little bit like Rodney Smith in that Rodney Smith was probably under the radar because of an injury in high school. I think Trayson Potts is a similar situation.
Yeah. I mean, they're very similar in that aspect because Rodney had knee injuries in high school. Trey Potts had knee injuries in high school. Rodney ended up being able to stay healthy for a majority of his career. Now we need to have Trey Potts do that. But that's not to say Cam Wiley can't take that next step for. We'll see what Kai Thomas can do, and we'll see if maybe Bryce Williams or Preston Jelen can carve out a role. And the other thing I'll note is I've gotten a lot of questions about Jason Williamson. And people are like, well, he's not in the spring game roster. Well, yeah, because he hasn't been really with the team. While, you know, he sustained an injury here in the last 2 months or so, I believe it was an upper body injury that, I mean, we're talking about a kid that has seen a lot of injuries already in his young Gopher career where he hasn't really been able to take off the ground yet. And that's where I don't really know what the future holds for Jason Williamson at Minnesota. I know he's rehabbing and I know he's trying to get his way back, but I mean, it's been very injury riddled, unfortunately, for the former Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Minnesota.
All right, let's move to defense. How about? Let's start with that defensive line. This was a spot we knew we had a lot of bodies at defensive tackle, a lot of experience, but hadn't seen a lot, hadn't seen all of it, you know, with the transfers, etc. And defensive end, other than Boye Mafe, a lot of question marks. I walked away feeling a lot better about this position group.
There, I mean, if you ask Chad Wilt, it's the deepest defensive line he's ever coached. And that's where you can look across the board starting at D-tackle. I mean, we're talking about Mike Adu Treadway, Niles Pinckney, the Clemson transfer, Val Martin, the NC State transfer, who didn't play in the spring game because of the COVID protocols. Then you also have guys like Rashad Chaney in year three, D'Angelo Carter in year three, and Logan Richter in year three. You know, Keontae Shad decided to transfer out this week because I think he saw the writing on the wall that, you know, from what it sounds like, Keontae Shad wanted to play a lot more snaps. He wanted to play the majority of the snaps. And Chad Wilt was honest and said, that's not going to be our defense. You know, the defensive tackle rotation here is, you know, Micah and Niles and Val and Chaney and Carter and Richter. You know, they've all earned a role too, and so that's where I think the biggest thing I took away is that Niles Pinckney had himself a heck of a spring game, and that's very encouraging. I mean, we knew he had the ability. He has shown it. There's a reason he's played like 1,200 snaps for Clemson the last four seasons, so he's obviously a talented guy that's played in some big games, but, you know, when the lights turned on, he shined. And I think part of the reason, I mean, you bring in a Niles Pinckney or a Val Martin is you want to push Micah Dutrueway because he's just kind of been the de facto starter the last 2 years at that one technique spot. Hasn't really been pushed, but because there's been a lot of young players behind him, and he's the elder statesman. Well, you bring in two more elder statesmen, whereas Micah Dutrueway is now in his seventh year of college football, just like Bryce Witham. But like Niles and Val, I think they're both year five and year six. And from what it sounds like behind the scenes, Micah has really picked up his play here this spring, and that's exactly what Minnesota wanted to see. And I'm hoping that we see an improved Micah Dutrueway. They think Val Martin is certainly going to have a role on passing downs as a disruptive three technique. And then I obviously mentioned Chaney and Carter and Richter, who will also have roles here. But, I mean, that's one of the things I mean, you talk about that DN position too, Luke. I mean, we know Boye Mafe is incredibly talented. I am fully expecting, as I've said on this podcast and Gopher Illustrated for many months, Boye Mafe is going to go out and be a top 100 pick in the NFL draft next year. And that's just kind of the reality of where it's going to be. And that's where Kinesezi finally take that next step. And that's something I talked at length about with Chad Wilt, the D-line coach, was says he's played a lot of football, but how do you help him really become that disruptive guy? And that's where the, you know, he's been talking, you know, you can read the interview on Gopher Illustrated, but we talked at length about Asezi. We talked at length about one of your favorite players, Thomas Rush, and kind of how he was just thrown into the fire last year as Boye's number two, where he gets three practices from linebacker to rush end. And then, hi, 3 weeks of fall camp, and here you are. I can tell you, Chad Wilt thinks Thomas Rush is going to be a very, very good player. And you still also have guys like MJ Anderson. Maybe my favorite thing that happened at the spring game, Luke, watching Jod Joyner be incredibly disruptive.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first time we've been able to see Ja, because he comes in June, no media access until, you know, May 1. And 11 months of strength and development. I mean, Ja was impactful at that five technique spot. That's the same position that it says he plays. And that's where, you know, it was funny kind of talking to some people over there. And I go, Ja looks pretty damn good. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're really excited about that. But then he goes, you know, Jalen Logan Redding, who didn't play, has looked even better than Ja has. And I'm like, really? And they go, well, there's a reason Jalen played and Ja didn't last year. So that's where I think you have Ja Joyner and Jalen Logan Redding as your future five techniques. Like I said, that's the position that it says he's been playing. And then you have the former state champion wrestler from Orono, Danny Strigow, has been penciled in as that rush end. So you also have Gage Keys there, but he's been out for most of the spring with an injury. Sounds like he's going to be back at some point this fall. But, I mean, the kind of thing I took away is Wilt thinks this should be a much improved D-line. And I think the thing that is the most interesting is they're going to rotate in total, folks. I kid you not, probably 10, 11 bodies on the D-line in a given game. You know, between the six defensive tackles, MJ Anderson, Asezi, Thomas Rush, Boye, and then I wouldn't be surprised if a Jalen Logan Redding or a Ja Joyner get some snaps there as well. So it's hopefully going to be much improved up there on the D-line.
So let's talk a little bit of linebacker here. I think probably – I'd say probably the thing I was most excited about was seeing Braylon Oliver run around. You know, coming off the injury, the fact that he was flying around, made a couple big hits. Like, it was just exciting. It's got to feel awesome for him to be able to do that, number one, right? To be able to practice through the spring and then get the opportunity to play in a spring game. That, to me, was at least probably, yeah, that was the highlight for me.
Yeah, talk about another position that's going to have a lot of guys rotating at it. And that's where, from practice one to the spring game, there may be not a linebacker that improved more than Braylon Oliver. And what I mean by that is you talk to Rossi or you talk to Fleck, and that first couple of practices for Braylon Oliver in March or April, whenever they started, I mean, they were horrible because the kid didn't trust. I mean, it's the first time he's practicing in full, essentially, on a knee that he hasn't trusted in 12 months. And the last time he did trust it, it went out on him. So that's where, as the spring went on and he got more reps and he got more reps and he got more reps, he became more and more comfortable on that. And as you know, I mean, he made a great play on the near sideline for a tackle for loss. And that's exactly what you want to see, is that kid continue to build more confidence. But I also think watching Jack Gibbons run around was fun too. I mean, he is bigger than Mariano Soria-Marin. And I think he's more instinctual where, you know, he's seen a lot. He was a four-year starter at an FCS school, and he played a lot of snaps, and he knows what to trust, and he knows what to not trust. And that's where I think he is certainly going to be in the mix there. I think Cody Lindenberg looks absolutely massive. And that's where, you know, I'd love to be more bullish on him for 21, but, you know, the more I talk to some people behind the scenes, I mean, they think Cody's going to be a really good player, but they're also like, this is his first time in a camp setting with us, because again, Cody Lindenberg was an early enrollee last year. So 13 months ago, 14, 15 months ago, he enrolls, he gets three practices in spring ball, and then COVID happens. And then he gets no fall camp, and he's kind of just thrown into the fire as the game one starter. You know, Cody was a kid in high school that played receiver and safety. So he still has a lot to learn about the linebacker position, but he obviously has the athletic traits that make you go, this is going to be a pretty good player. And then you also obviously have guys like Mariano and James Gordon. And we saw a lot of Jaquandus Burns, you know, my second cousin there, along with Derek Burns. And again, that's where Rossi talked about, like, everybody wants to pencil us into those two starters because they are traditionally a 4-2-5 defense, and that's fine. But Rossi, the way he explains it to me, you know, yeah, we're probably going to have two linebackers out there for most games, unless we're playing Northwestern or Iowa or Wisconsin, we'll go a three linebacker. But just because we start those three linebackers doesn't mean in certain situations on a passing down or a certain running down that we won't rotate in fresh bodies. Because the thing he got across to me, and again, you can read it on Gopher Illustrated, his words verbatim, but I'll paraphrase, is everybody has a different strength to them, each one of these linebackers. And we want to make sure that we're playing to the strengths, which, Luke, it's a novel concept to say that. So I'd love to see them be much improved here. But, you know, what Jack Gibbons does well is different than what Mariano does well, is different than what Cody Lindenberg does well, than Braylon Oliver. And in those specific situations where we think we can maximize those strengths and, minimize the weaknesses of others, that's how they're going to kind of play it. So, we also didn't get to see some linebackers because, once again, COVID and this national pandemic that we're dealing with.
Okay, let's talk a little bit of defensive back before we basically skip special teams. Defensive back, this was a redemption tour for one Trell Smith.
Tee time.
I mean,
if you want to have a takeaway from the spring game, it's time. Like, apparently Tee Time just forgot about the last 2 years where it was really, really sad. And Tee Time said, Benjamin St. Juste ain't no longer here, so I'm going to try to go get that spot alongside Coney. And I'm going to tell you this much. I'm all here for the Tee Time redemption tour if this continues into the fall. Because you can – I mean, you look and see Terrell Smith, and you can see the photos that I posted on GI as well. There isn't a more physically impressive defensive back in that room than maybe Tyler Newbin than Terrell Smith. He is 6'1", he is long, and he is among the fastest players on the team. You know, he had some 10-second, I think it was like a 10-6, 100 back in high school. Like, the physical talent has never been the issue for Terrell Smith. It's been that he's too grabby and he's not physical enough. Well, we see Terrell Smith with a beautiful pass breakup, and then obviously that interception where he just reads and reacts to the – to the fade Zach Anik said he knows he's going to throw, makes the interception. But, like, I want to be more excited, Luke. I want to be fully in the boat, fully on board with it. I just want to know in 3 months when fall camp starts, like, this is the version we're going to see of Terrell Smith. Because we know what we have in Coney. We know that Justice Harris has his role. And it's just a giant question mark at that corner spot, which is why Minnesota's been seriously exploring the transfer corner portal and now the transfer safety portal as well, with Flip Dixon's injury. That, I mean, if you don't think that they're a little nervous about corner or safety, then why are they looking at and offering other transfers that could come in and help right away? And so if Terrell Smith can take that step forward, you know, along with guys like Jalen Glaze and Justin Wally and Miles Fleming, I mean, that would be really, really good. And then that safety position, I mean, you also have to be encouraged, Luke, that Tyler Newbin, I mean, he was making some plays.
Yeah, he's making plays. Yeah. Yeah, and also we should say Wally looks good on offense too. We totally glossed over that.
Yeah, I know some people got a little excited about that, but let me tell you, in a spring game that saw two fat guys score touchdowns, and I'm all, trust me, as a 230-pound individual, I am team big boy scores touchdowns. But it's like, I don't think you're going to see a ton of Justin Wally on offense, even though, again, it's entirely possible. He was a really good running back in Biloxi, Mississippi there. But, you know, Wally also had himself a heck of a spring. And that's, you know, one of the things you should also take away is, Mr. Mississippi lived up to the Mr. Mississippi hype for a true freshman in his first spring camp. Was he didn't back down. He was as athletic as they hoped he was going to be. They were as athletic, or excuse me, as physical as they hoped he was going to be. He still got a long way to go, but I'd be willing to bet Justin Wally does not redshirt this fall. And that's where you move to that safety spot. I mean, Tyler Newbin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that Joe Harris-Simiak talked about the safeties coach with me is, when you look back on how awful the safeties were in 2020, and I mean, there's no getting around the way Howden and Newbin played, but they were both playing different positions than what they had played in 19. Where Howden, I think, was playing – I'm going to screw this up.
He was playing the role that that Antoine Winfield Jr. played.
That's the what I'm trying to get across here is he moved from either strong to free – or free to strong. So he moved from one safety spot to the other because Antoine Winfield leaves and they move him over. And then Tyler Newbin, who had been Jordan Howden's backup, moves to the other side. So they were playing two different safety spots than what they had played the year before. And then again, COVID hits. They get three spring practices and then nothing until October's abbreviated spring camp. So, you know, Harris-Simiak's like, we did what we could. And they were thrown into the fire, and obviously the results were the results. But, you know, that's where they're optimistic now that each one of them kind of knows their job, that they're going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, the thing we had preached on this podcast, Luke, was, I mean, the safeties need to be a lot more physical. And it was absolute sweet music to my ears. Like, you thought Frank Sinatra was playing, I mean, in the next room when Joe Harris-Simiak was talking to me, because – and that was the first thing he mentioned was Howden and Newbin. I've been trying to get them to be more physical. And I'm like, sweet Moses. I mean, where do I sign? What do you need me to do? And that's where it sucks that Flip, Michael Dixon, got injured early in spring practice, and he missed all of spring ball after that. But it sounds like he's going to be ready to go for the fall because obviously they think he has a tremendously high future. But again, I don't know if it's just me, you know, having the access kind of to these guys and knowing their thoughts. And you can read all the thoughts on Gopher Illustrated, but it's tough to not look through the scenarios that they present as to why things went bad in 2019. And by bad 3-4, which should have been 4-3, which potentially should have been 5-2.
Yeah.
And not feel optimistic about, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to go win 11 games for the second time in two straight years. But it's like they should be, you know, a pretty good football team that should be, when you get to those final three games of the year against Iowa, Indiana, and Wisconsin, I mean, it's going to be you win two of the three, and we're going to be talking about Indianapolis.
Yeah. Okay. I'll play devil's advocate a little bit here. You know, and I've read most of the pieces. I get, you know, short spring, also short fall camp. But in the same respect, everybody else was faced with that, right? So while it's an excuse, it's also not an excuse, right? It's not one that everybody else wasn't up against. I think that's fair. We have to say that. Also, coaches got to sell, right? They're recruiting all the time. Like, they got to sell. So they're selling hope.
Why do they have to sell to me?
They don't, but they...
I mean, I guess my website is one that sells hope.
Yeah, it sells hope, but additionally, like, you know, this is the dead time. They want, like, anything to keep some focus on Gopher football. And now I'm not saying that they don't have an opportunity to be good.
I would argue strongly against that, considering what we got for access this spring. But
yeah,
Luke doesn't want to hear about it. So
that's fair. That's fair. I mean, they're not going to tell you, like, hey, you know what? Such and such, he just sucks. We missed.
I mean, right? To be fair, they do, but I just don't really want to talk about that on the podcast. It's more so maybe the guys I gloss over. There's a reason I gloss over them.
Yeah, sure.
Between the lines here.
But I do think they have an opportunity to be good. At the end of the day, you got to stay healthy, right? That is probably reason number one you can be successful is if you can stay healthy. And they have to have a few things go their way.
I mean, again, you have Mo Ibrahim stay healthy for 13 games. You have the offensive line stay healthy for 13 games. You have Boye Mafe and Coney Durr and all these, like, super important people stay healthy for 13 games. I'm going to tell you, we're talking about an 8-win team. And we'll see kind of where the chips go from there. But I think the point I just kind of took across from the spring was, number one, it's nice to watch Gopher football. Number two, how nice is a spring game when it's 90 degrees out instead of 35 degrees in a snowstorm?
It was beautiful in the shade.
And I think there is a reason to certainly be optimistic. And this team certainly still has warts. I mean, the run defense last year was inexcusably bad.
Yeah.
One of the worst we've ever seen. I mean, and no one's running from that. But now that you add Niles and you add Val and you add Gibbons, and you have another year of experience to a defensive line that is now incredibly old. I think they're all at least of the legal drinking age. I mean, that's exactly what wins games in the Big Ten West is offense and defensive line play. And we talked about the offensive line that is all fourth-year players and up. We talked about the defensive line that's all fourth-year players and up. And that's where, again, it's got me feeling optimistic that this could be a pretty good year for this Gopher football team.
Yeah, and I can see how the formula comes together, right? And you know, this happens all the time in baseball, right? We've got analytics, and then all of a sudden, you know, you assemble this team, and all of a sudden it doesn't pan out, right? So I can see where it could also fall apart. I like the trajectory they're on, especially for this year. I'm sure we'll talk about it. I don't love the trajectory for 2022, but that's for a different day.
Well, here's the thing is if all that change does happen in 2022, that means 2021 was a hell of a season.
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of people that maybe aren't going to come back for that sixth year.
Yeah. And I think we got to also look at, and we probably should dedicate some more time to this. We won't talk about it today. How is recruiting going to change in football? It is drastically changing in basketball already. I don't think that you're going to build programs anymore. You're going to build teams for 1 year at a time. I don't know if that's going to be the case in football. We'll probably learn more. We'll probably know more in the fall as teams have been assembled and what recruiting is going to look like in the whole, you know, how are we going to fill all these, not fill, but how are we going to prioritize scholarships and these sorts of things. The next 4-ish years are going to be interesting, man.
The transfer portal in this 1 year eligibility, or excuse me, not 1 year eligibility, but the one-time transfer thing has just completely thrown a curveball into building in college football.
It's not just that though, man. It's the fact that they basically get a free year, and how do you plan? Right. I mean, I don't know.
There's a lot. Trust me, I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of question marks about what everybody's team is going to look like in 7 months from now when the college football season ends, and everybody's got to get back under the 85. So are you pushing guys out? Or, I mean, it's going to be an interesting time. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. I don't really have anything else, man, that I want to touch on. I think that we probably talk again here soon. And then obviously we'll talk in the summer that we got to keep people busy on their lawnmowers, right?
As a homeowner that we've talked about at length, and it's nice to have something to listen to while you mow the lawn. So we will try to provide you the fodder that you desire. And if you want some more in-between podcasts, Luke, do you know where to direct the people?
It's gopherillustrated.com, I believe. I think that's your day job. So,
and I'd say that Luke and I are hoping in that the pandemic continues to hopefully wind down. And I know you're fully vaccinated, right?
I am street legal on Saturday, mean boy.
So you get your second shot on Saturday?
No. I've already got my second shot, but it'll all be 14 days. Am I 2 weeks after? I'll be street legal.
I was about to say, so I got my Johnson & Johnson about a month ago, so I'm street legal. And then, you know, we'll see as kind of Minnesota continues to get more and more vaccinated. We'll see what the governor does. But I still think there's hope for Luke and I to potentially hold a live event, maybe in July at some point. But again, I don't want to get hopes up too much for that until we know where the world is at in 8, 10, 12 weeks from now.
Man, that feels like forever ago.
I know. And then we can get some people outdoor at a brewery. You know, I can convince some Gopher football coaches to come over. We all can drink adult beverages, talk Gopher football, and have a good time.
All right. So I want to thank you all for listening. It's fun to do this again. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Gopher football in 2021. I'm less looking forward to Gopher football in 2022, but it'll all be fun to watch it as we go along the way. So thanks again for listening, and go Gophers.